Welcome into the KSO show. Mason Voth, Drew Galloway here with you. It still cracks me up to see that Avery Johnson highlight and just think about how nutso that game was and how infuriating it has to be for Texas Tech. That, I mean, think of how Will Howard has played since that game. He's been pretty darn good. He's looked a lot like 2022 Will Howard, and you would not have thought that he would have been at a point there where he wasn't playing in that game. K-State went away from him, and still Avery Johnson just run all over the place on Texas Tech. That will always be a game that makes me laugh. It's, you know, it's unfortunate that I don't dislike Texas Tech so much to where, like, I don't feel even better about it. It's like if that had been, you know, Texas or KU or somebody that it's just like there's a lot of vitriol for, it would have been even more enjoyable than it already was to witness that game. I'd throw TCU into that mix. I really turned off by TCU the last couple of years.
I'd agree with that.
I just think that they've shot up pretty easily the dislikable scale in the Big 12. And once everybody leaves, they're probably going to be the team that I feel like I have the most vitriol for amongst the others. Although Utah's come in a little snooty and snobby, so they might be they might be up towards the top there, but they're at least good. You know, TCU is like, they popped off 1 year and now they're cowering back into the corner. So I don't know what to make of them, but
I'm trying to not laugh my butt off here because I was literally going to open and my first thing I was going to say to you was, doesn't that Texas Tech game feel so long ago?
It does. I mean, well, in all honesty, it was a long time ago. I mean, what was that? It's close to like exactly a month ago that K-State was in Lubbock and that game was being played. We're recording this on November 15th. That game in Lubbock was played on October 14th. So a month and a day when that Texas Tech game happened. And it feels like the season is in a wildly different spot now than what it was at that point for K-State. Unfortunately, there are some bad news on the front of K-State being in a wildly different spot. They're really not in a wildly different spot because their chances of making it to the Big 12 title game have taken a significant hit given the newest update, ruling, change, whatever you want to call it.
It's a clarification.
Yeah, it's BS is what it is. The Big 12 had to clarify their poorly written, clarify in quotations, their poorly written tiebreaker scenarios for the Big 12 championship game, which had originally stated that, hey, if these teams don't all play each other and they are tied, then the head-to-head is negated. And you can look through the rules. And now, look, what they have amended it and clarified or changed it to makes total sense. It absolutely makes total sense. Oklahoma State, if they beat K-State and Oklahoma in the regular season, which they did, they should absolutely be able, if those teams finish tied, they should absolutely be able to play ahead of them. They are more deserving. They won those games. That is fine. But that's not what the rule said at the start of this season. It's not what the rule said 2 days ago when multiple people confirmed with the Big 12 that, hey, if this scenario plays out, it would be K-State that gets the tiebreaker. And now somewhere along the way, there's been enough of a stink made that the Big 12 said, oh, I don't know, we should probably look at this. And they've gone ahead and they've decided to make some changes to it. And the way that it is worded now is that if the teams don't all play each other, but one team has achieved wins against all the teams that are tied, then they will get it. That's essentially the simple way of saying what it's been changed to, as opposed to previously, K-State did not play Oklahoma. So if they all finish tied, even though Oklahoma State beat both Oklahoma and K-State, that would negate it. They would go to the next tiebreaker. And currently that would give K-State the edge, or at least how we anticipate the rest of the season to play out over the next 2 weeks. That is no longer the case. That has changed at this point in time. And K-State, they aren't getting screwed over in the sense of being more deserving of it than Oklahoma State. You can make the case that they're equally deserving, because there's one way to look at this, and it's that, yeah, Oklahoma State has those two wins over the teams that they are currently tied with, so they should deserve to be in. There's also a case to be made that K-State and Oklahoma, you know what they didn't do? They did not go out and lose to UCF and Iowa State. Now, K-State could still lose to Iowa State, technically. And Oklahoma did lose to Kansas. But they did not lose to those schools. K-State's two losses right now are to the team that's in first place above them by a field goal and by a touchdown to the team that is tied with them. So you could make that argument, and that's totally fair, too. But also it makes sense the other way to say, yeah, Oklahoma State deserves it. So that's not how K-State got screwed over here. But K-State and Oklahoma, they should have the right to be upset given the fact that the rule, it's not a clarification. That is bogus from the Big 12. That is for certain.
It is gaslighting by the Big 12 is what that is.
Yes.
To keep saying that it's a clarification.
And to make it all worse, they send Brett McMurphy out to do the job for him to explain this. This was the Brett McMurphy tweet. Big 12 tiebreaker regarding step one of multiple team ties in conference tiebreaker procedure. In event of multiple team tie, head-to-head wins take procedure a precedence. If all the tied teams are not common opponents, the tied teams that defeated each of the other tied teams earns championship berth. There have been no changes to any rules regarding Big 12 football tiebreaker procedures, which were agreed upon prior to the season and went into effect August of 2023. Okay, that would be fine if it was just a poorly worded explanation in the tiebreaker. I gave him too much credit saying that was the case earlier. It's not. If that was the case, you left a giant and meaningful chunk of an explanation out from your tiebreaker rules. And so you have added something to it. When you add to something, you're not clarifying.
No.
You are making a change. You are making something new. It is a new rule that the Big 12 has instituted on November 15th, whether they try to tell us they have or not. And like you said, you know, there's the gaslighting by the Big 12. Like, well, no, this is actually a clarification. We already agreed on all this in August of 2023. I would love to right now, without fear of punishment, be able to ask Gene Taylor and Joe Castiglione if they agreed to this in August of 2023, or if the rules were written poorly and they skipped over a possible scenario and they now have two schools that are getting screwed over in K-State and Oklahoma in the sense of the rules are changing on them. And to add to it, Brett McMurphy doing the Lord's work here for the Big 12. Where did Brett McMurphy go to school, Drew?
Oklahoma State, the school that will get the biggest advantage by this new rule. Hmm. Isn't that convenient?
Very convenient, I would say. Wild that he would volunteer to go on the crusade for the Big 12 office here. So,
meanwhile, the Big 12 still hasn't put out a statement or anything.
Yeah.
And on the actual like Big 12 show on ESPN Plus yesterday, they were talking about this exact scenario where Oklahoma State wouldn't go.
Well, let me ask you big picture here, Drew. Is it time to impeach Brett Yormark as conference commissioner of the Big 12?
I won't go that far, but God, like you said, like Oklahoma State is probably the most deserving because they've beat K-State and Oklahoma, but they weren't the most deserving by the rule that was in place literally 24 hours ago. So that's where you kind of lose me on this, where this can be tabled and move on to move it to the off season. Like, it sets a weird and kind of like a dark cloud kind of precedence that we can come in and clarify, in quotations, rules with 9 days left in the regular season. Like, this doesn't feel like something that should happen this close to the end of the season.
Yes, you are absolutely right. There is no way that this should be happening at this point in this season. And it's kind of ridiculous the way that this has worked out and how everything has gone down. But the Big 12 is making their changes here, and now we'll see how it ends up working out. So that is currently, and that's how things go in the Big 12. And K-State now a little bit more of a long shot to get themselves to Arlington. They're now going to need Oklahoma State to lose somewhere along the way, which isn't totally out of the question, but as we discussed, now Oklahoma State already blew it against one of these teams. They finished the season with three games against three of the newcomers. They lost at UCF. They play at Houston this weekend. Houston is coming off of a loss at home to Cincinnati, so that doesn't breed a lot of confidence in you. And then they host BYU next week in the regular season finale. And I would be interested to know, going back and looking in these scenarios where they've happened, where when a team has had a chance to, since the Big 12 went away from North-South divisions, how many teams have had a chance to either clinch a share or win the Big 12 title at the end of the season and haven't done it, or earn a berth to the Big 12 championship? Because you think about K-State, since this happened, 2012, they finished off Texas at home, and 2022, they took care of business against Kansas and got themselves the Big 12 title. And it would just stand to reason that Oklahoma State playing a home game with a Big 12 championship berth on the line, it would just seem unlikely and improbable that they would lose at home to BYU. But I guess it's a possibility. And then I don't know how the tiebreaker would work out if it's K-State and Oklahoma that are tied, because Oklahoma also has a pretty easy finishing stretch. They play BYU this weekend in Provo. It's an 11 a.m. kick, but 10 a.m. For all the locals in Provo. And then they are at home on the Friday after Thanksgiving taking on TCU. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how things kind of finish off at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how everything will shake out. I actually see a statement from a Big 12 spokeswoman that Glenn Kinley of KSNT actually reached out and kind of got a statement from them. Are you ready for this gaslighting again?
Mm-hmm.
Regarding step one of multiple team ties and conference tiebreaker procedure, in the event of a multiple team tie, head-to-head wins take precedence. If all the tied teams are not common opponents, the tied team that defeated each of the other tied teams earns the championship berth. There have been no changes to any rules regarding Big 12 tiebreaker procedures, which were agreed upon prior to the season and went in effect August of 2023.
You know what's strange about that is that's wildly like to the point and very clearly defined, and that's something that the previous rules did not have. Look, I don't have a problem with the rules if this is truly what it had been in August and this is how you start a season. But if you are having to do this with 2 weeks left in the regular season, there is something nefarious going on here. And I don't think that the Big 12 is intentionally trying to screw K-State. I don't think they care who they're screwing over here. But they are trying to, in the middle of this, right a wrong that was a pretty big wrong that they had. Like, they had a pretty big omission and at one point this season, and they're kind of screwed right now. So they're handling it poorly, you know? Like, you just got to wear this.
Yeah, the sentence literally said, if not every tied team has played together, go to step two. You can't just pretend like that sentence just didn't exist. And that's what they keep trying to say. And that's the annoying part of all of this. Just admit that you made a mistake in the first place.
Yeah.
You don't need to gaslight everybody.
This does, thinking about it, this does, I think, almost put K-State in a impossible situation to get to Arlington again, because I think the tiebreaker after head-to-head would go to Oklahoma because they beat Texas. And that's it would end up killing K-State.
I think it would take Texas losing, and then I think just a Texas loss to Iowa State I think would be fine, but who knows, because next week the rules could be changed again.
That's the truth. It would take a Texas loss. Now basically all these schools went out and Texas loses. In that case, it does seem like K-State has a chance, but at this point I don't know how we're going to calculate any of this with any certainty. So we're probably just going to have to wait till Saturday night when the Big 12 next week tells us who's playing in Arlington and who isn't. My assumption will be that we're not talking about K-State playing in the Big 12 title game this year. And again, at the end of the day, that I'm totally okay with that. I've been resigned to the fact since they lost in Stillwater that they weren't going to the Big 12 title game. And the way that things are set up, like, they didn't take care of business in games they easily could have won. They laid eggs at least early in the game against Texas too. And they have nobody to blame but themselves for not getting to Arlington. I mean, they're going to do basically the same thing they did last year and miss out on a trip to Arlington, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But the Big 12 is much weaker this year. And so there was less of a chance that the team at the top or the team that you were competing with to get there would drop another silly game. That's how it happened to Texas last year, where Texas ended up in a position where they easily could have done it, but they dropped that silly one to start Big 12 play at Texas Tech. And there really just isn't anybody in the Big 12 this year that's capable of doing that. If you look around and see how everything else went down. And then also Texas didn't have to play Oklahoma State this season. That's a big deal. Last year, that was one of Texas's losses. So it's just K-State's probably having a pretty similar season. And unfortunately, just scenario isn't going to work out in their favor. But
the part that probably sucks as like a Big 12 supporter and all this is that this is all kind of leading up to they do all this, then Oklahoma State loses again, and it doesn't matter, and it's going to be Texas versus Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, that is probably the scenario that it really opens up for, and especially with kind of how all this has gone down, that they do this to like preemptively make it so Oklahoma State would have gotten in either way, and then it's lining up for them to lose this weekend again and lose to Houston.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that would be great. And then you just got to get the loss somewhere else and see what happens. It's not totally out of the realm of possibility, but you are relying on Iowa State to get it done this weekend, which could happen. Night game, Ames, Jonathan Brooks, not there for Quinn Ewers to rely on anymore. Because I think, you know, Quinn Ewers has been benefited by having some pretty impressive running backs to pull with him. So we'll see what ends up happening. As for K-State, all right, forget about the Big 12 title game hopes for however long. Worry about it if they actually get there. Focus on getting to 9-3 in the regular season. And more importantly, first, taking care of business against Kansas for the 15th straight time. K-State, KU set for the 6 o'clock kick this weekend. Drew, Chris Klieman spoke to the media yesterday. It wasn't the most over-the-top, exciting, informative affair compared to at least some that there have been. What was the biggest takeaway, though, from what came out of Chris Klieman's mouth?
Probably the biggest takeaway, I would say, would be Jake Clifton, a linebacker that got hurt last week against Baylor. It took me a minute to figure out or to remember the schedule. That got hurt in the Baylor game on Saturday. He will miss the remainder of the season with an injury. So kind of going into his place again will be Austin Romaine, who is a true freshman linebacker that has started at the mic for, I believe, 4 or 5 games. And then has been the first off the bench to replace Clifton. Another thing that I thought was interesting was it's not just going to be Bo Palmer in this replacement of Jake Clifton, that it'll also be Rex Van Wy, which also means that Austin Moore will probably bounce back and forth between the mic and the will backer when Romaine or Palmer needs a blow, which I think is interesting going forward because that means that Austin Moore will probably do most of the calls and the checks.
Thinking about the way that the linebacker is moving now at this point, I thought Rex Van Wy, you know, probably the first we've gotten to really see of him in extended action. Now that the red shirt thing isn't in question, he'll get it regardless of how many games he plays the rest of the way. I thought he stood out quite a bit on Saturday when he was in there, and that's kind of one of the first things you notice where, like, Austin Romaine early in the season, you're like, well, who is this guy making plays? And you realize, oh yeah, that's Austin Romaine. Well, that was kind of what Rex Van Wy was doing against Baylor. So I was impressed. It helps that they can kind of just go like uninhibited now with his usage, because obviously you've lost two linebackers for the season at this point, and that's it's a tough thing to kind of swallow. In addition to losing to Jake Clifton, K-State will not be losing Khalid Duke for any additional time. There was some concern about that after he tried taking on the Baylor player that threw the first punch, and gave some extra.
It wasn't taking on. He clearly won the fight. If there was a winner, it was definitely Khalid Duke.
That's probably fair and true. But he will not miss any extended time, so he'll be a full go for the game against KU. That's just big to have him, and it would feel like a little bit of a gut punch if you lost another guy for a situation like that. And Chris Klieman, I'm going to guess that based off what they heard from Khalid Duke or what they saw on video, they're probably like, yeah, hey, don't do that again. But Chris Klieman didn't seem to be too upset at Khalid Duke for what took place. So I don't think it's a big deal. I think they're moved on, and he'll be available for the game against KU.
Oh, yeah. Even after the game, Chris Klieman was pretty like calm when he was talking about it. And even how he answered the question at the press conference yesterday, he was just like, yeah, he'll be good to go. And then just moved on. Like, there was no talk about, like, yeah, we told him, like, not to do it or anything. It's just like, yeah, he's playing.
Which I thought there was going to be a possibility that did come up where he was like, yeah, and we're like, you know, he's got to be better than that or all that. No, just kind of moved on. So I guess that's the way things are rolling at this point in time. One of the other things that Chris Kleiman talked a lot about yesterday was the emphasis on this game was one of them, how the rivalry has kind of changed since he's been at K-State. And then obviously he said, you know, even how different it is from when Lance Leipold took over in 2021 to where it is now. But in terms of the actual game itself, he brought up that their preparation doesn't really change at all depending on who plays quarterback for KU. They're so good offensively. They do so many different things, give you so many different looks that how you have to prepare for them, it doesn't matter if it's Daniels, Bean, Ballard, whatever quarterback you want to roll out there. What do you make of how K-State preps for this KU quarterback situation?
I mean, I don't think that he's necessarily wrong because their offense is so good and it's so run-based that it kind of doesn't necessarily matter who is in at quarterback because Daniel Hyshaw is a capable running back. Devin Neal's really, really good. And they do so many shifts and motions no matter what. The only thing that was a little bit different from their offense and the little bit that we kind of saw Saturday while we were waiting on the K-State game to get going was that KU did run a little bit more wildcat than normal. And what was also interesting was that they had a few plays where either Daniel Heisch or Devin Neal would get the snap and actually fake it to Cole Ballard. So, I mean, it's kind of like it goes back to the preseason where everybody kind of talked about how one of the main reasons that Jalen Daniels probably shouldn't have been preseason Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year was because of how good Jason Bean was when he was in. And you could argue that Bean was probably the better quarterback last year. So, I mean, it is all kind of the system. And that's not like a slight at any of the KU quarterbacks. It's just that their system is so good that they don't have to change it that much.
Yeah, and it's what makes them so dangerous and so, a pain in the butt to get ready for if you're K-State. I mean, you think about last year with KU, we said going into that game, like, yeah, K-State should be able to handle them, but that is an offense now that you have to be legitimately worried about at what they can do, and it's the same type of thing this year. And they're doing it this season with, I still don't think it's great, but an improved defense, certainly. And this year's team is better than what last year's team was. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But yeah, it certainly is a different ball game. Even if you're not preparing differently, if Cole Ballard goes, it's a totally different world on what you're facing at quarterback than Jason Bean or Jalen Daniels, which it doesn't seem like Jalen Daniels will go because he wasn't even mentioned in any of the quarterback conversations this week. Except for the fact that he still shows up on the depth chart as an or as a starter. So either KU's trying to pull off the con of the century or he, you know, who knows what's going on there. There's a lot of like Bill Snyder, how Lance Leipold is handling this situation where there's so much stuff out there that even the KU football staff is changing what they say about the situation every single day. Just Jalen Daniels is probably the only quarterback that hasn't been mentioned this week verbally by anybody in this conversation. So we'll see what it looks like. But obviously that's going to be the biggest thing that people are on the watch for when Saturday night rolls around for K-State and KU. Anything else from K-State, KU coming up this weekend that stands out to you that needs to be made note of?
I mean, Kleiman did talk a little bit about the turnovers. Like in the last, like, I think he said 5 games, K-State's plus 10 in turnover margin. And I mean, that's important this week. It's important every week, but it's important this week when you go on the road, going to be a pretty big crowd to take care of the ball and potentially force turnovers yourself. And especially with this KU defense, they are pretty opportunistic when they get turnovers. I think they have 3 defensive touchdowns this year. So, I mean, that's one thing that stands out, but it's more of a standout of just like, it's an every week thing, but Chris Kleiman did kind of go out of his way to make sure that everybody knew that they've been taking care of the ball can't have been forcing turnovers, because if you remember after the Oklahoma State game, one of the points where he said, like, we're not a very good team right now, is because he said that they were turning the ball over too much and they weren't forcing any of their own.
Yeah, and some people really did not like that Chris Clement almost made it seem like the bigger problem was that they weren't forcing any of them, which, look, I'll be honest, like, yeah, Will Howard was bad in that Oklahoma State game. Giving it away three times is inexcusable, but he was right in that moment that overall in the course of the season, the bigger issue was that K-State was not forcing any turnovers. Like, that wasn't something they were doing. It didn't happen against Missouri. They got one against UCF, like, later on in the second half when Timmy McClain just kind of floated one up.
And they got two against Troy, and one was at the very end of the game.
Yeah, so, like, it wasn't the most asinine thing for him to suggest. Just, you know, people have their preconceived thoughts about Will Howard, and we're ready to jump on him again and put all the blame on him. But he was right in that moment. And look, I was just as frustrated as everybody else with how Will Howard performed in that game. But I felt the same way, where the defense, they did enough in that game against Oklahoma State to give the offense a chance. But to that point in the season, the defense had not done anything to help K-State win games. They had just done things to help K-State not lose games. And as we've kind of rolled on here, they've started to do things to help them win. And really, that kind of started in the game against Texas Tech, where they obviously forced the three turnovers from Jake Strong in the second half that just flipped the game on its head. And then as they've moved forward since then, the defense has made legitimate stops. They've gotten the turnovers in the last couple of games. So now the defense is an actual element of this team that is giving you a chance to win games, just not lose them. And I think that's one benefit moving forward. I mean, if you think about the three losses that K-State has this season that took place earlier in the year, or the Texas one most recently, it has come down to, yeah, you've done enough things to where you could have won that game, but you didn't go out and win it. You just didn't, you know, lose it. Like, Missouri banged a 61-yard field goal on you. That's some pretty harsh luck. I don't know that many 61-yarders go in a college game, but that one did. So, you know, you maybe didn't deserve to lose that one, but you certainly didn't deserve to win it. And I think that's what I've seen maybe change now with the way K-State's playing, is they're putting themselves in better positions to go out and take a win, as opposed to hoping you do enough things right and letting the win fall into your lap.
And outside of the Texas game, you could point out that one of the main reasons that K-State lost was being minus in the turnover margin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nope. They've picked it up. They're being clean. They're looking good. And it's a big deal against Kansas. I mean, it'll be in question of the week this week, talking about who wins the turnover battle. And it's not just about who's plus minus is better turnover wise come Saturday night. It's about when and where you make the turnovers or don't make the turnovers. Because Kansas is as good as anybody in the country at capitalizing on major mistakes. They lead the country in defensive touchdowns this season, and the four that they've gotten this year have directly led to them winning three games. I mean, they beat BYU by what ended up being like 11 points or something. They scored two defensive touchdowns in the game. They got 14 free points in the game, a pick and a fumble return. They had a pick six against Oklahoma to start the game that earned them a ton of momentum. They had a pick six against Iowa State 2 weeks ago that gave them a chance, and they ended up winning that game by a touchdown. So that is a big deal for K-State. Is there has to be an emphasis on going out, taking care of the football, and not gifting Kansas, who is a very opportunistic defense, the chance to get one leg up on you and then also get the crowd involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's another point. Like, the crowd will be a lot more into it with turnovers. So, I mean, it's an every week thing, but especially this week, you got to take care of the ball.
Are you ready to experience the loudest and fullest David Booth Memorial Stadium you've ever seen in your life this weekend?
Kind of. I'm excited. I don't really know what to expect going in. This is, I think, my fourth time going to Lawrence, and I think this is going to be by far the best crowd. So I'm really interested to see what it's like.
Yeah, it will definitely be the best crowd for a K-State KU game that there's ever been. My first K-State KU game that I saw in person was 2011 in Lawrence. That was 59-21, kind of a blowout.
I was also there, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah, that was a good time. I was there with my cousin who was he probably would have been a freshman at KU at the time, or freshman or sophomore. So I spent the weekend with him and went to that game. That was a good time for me, at least. I don't know that he necessarily enjoyed it. It was good though, because he had a bunch of buddies from his hometown that were there, and I think two or three of them went to K-State. So it wasn't like the K-State stuff was totally outnumbered, but it was already pretty sparse crowds there. So I've been to every road game in Lawrence since then, except for the 2015 game. I missed the 2015 game because there was some bad winter weather, and I had the physical tickets in my possession, and my parents were like, no, we're not doing that because of the weather. I was a little upset, but you know, so we moved on. Tickets. What?
RIP physical tickets.
I had actually gotten them from one of my best friends. His family had season tickets to KU games, and so they were going to be out of town, and I was like, you know, I will take them. And so I had them, just never got to use them. And then I did see one non K-State KU game in Lawrence while I was in college. Would have been the 2017 season. KU was on their bye week, or K-State was on their bye week. So KU was playing. I was like, well, let's just go check them out. They played West Virginia, and it was not a close game. So although KU made a little bit of a charge at one point, and it made you really start to think, like, could they do this? And they in fact could not do it, but they tried. They really did try. West Virginia got up 35-10, and then at the end of the third quarter, KU had made it 35-27. So you want to take a guess on who the quarterback in that game was for West Virginia?
Was that Will Grier?
That was Will Grier. Yes. Current. Well, I don't think he's current anymore. I think he's been booted, but at the start of the season was a Dallas Cowboys quarterback, but not anymore. How about this stat line in the game? Khalil Herbert, 291 rushing yards and two touchdowns on 30.
And they lost.
Yeah.
I always forget that Khalil Herbert was at KU for a minute.
Well, this has kind of been the KU thing where they've just decided that the best running back on their roster wasn't good enough for them, and then they have to move on. It is the most baffling thing of all time. Why KU looked at him was like, yeah, Khalil Herbert, get the hell out of here. We're moving on from you. Cause he made it all the way through 4 years there. And in 2019, he decided that, hey, I gotta get out of here. I think he was, was it him that decided after like the West Virginia game that he was done? I think so. And then they moved on. He moved on, and you know, they had to keep riding Puka Williams or whoever it was. So, yeah, Khalil Herbert, Kansas Jayhawk legend, now a starting running back in the NFL when he's actually healthy. So, good times. I love a good old-fashioned old Big 12 box score and can go through and everything else. So, I will give everybody permission to quit listening right now. Drew, just name a year of K-State KU since the streak began, and I'm going to quiz you about what happened in that game, just random things that pop up. So, you name your year. Some people are really going to love this. And like I said, other people, I gave you permission to quit listening. So
we'll go 2016.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Seth's friend who gave me the 2015 tickets, he came to the 2016 game with me. Well, I think you know the big note about the 2016 game. That was Bill Snyder's 200th
win. Yeah.
So, all right. So, all right. Here's a good one. How many passes did K-State throw in that game?
I'll go like 18. It had to be something crazy low if you're throwing this out there.
It was crazy low. K-State threw only 11 passes in the 2016 game. Jesse Ertz only threw 6 of them. Joe Huebner threw 4 of them, and Alex Delton threw 1 of them. Alex Barnes and Jesse Ertz, they were both right around 100 yards. Barnes, 103. Ertz, 99. K-State had one player with 2 touchdowns in the game. Do you know who that player was?
Justin Sillman.
No, it was not Justin Sillman. 2 carries in the game for Justin Sillman. It's a very easy answer. Think about it. 2016 K-State football. Who scored 2 touchdowns on 15 yards rushing?
Oh, Winston Dimmel.
Yes, that would be Winnie finding the end zone multiple times in that game. Carter Justin, Stanley, shout out, 300 yards passing in that game.
Justin Simmel felt great coming out of the hand.
No, I don't think it was a bad guess. I do think that there was there's a chance of that. Also, so K-State was 6 of 11 passing. Only one receiver caught a pass in the game. It was Byron Pringle. He caught 5 balls for 77 yards, and Charles Jones had one catch for 22 yards. I was at the game, and it, you know, K-State won 34-19. It got comfortable for a stretch there, but I don't even have a recollection of it being like that weird and bad and ugly. So you picked an awesome game to start this off with.
Yeah, I don't remember that game at all, besides it being Bill Snyder's 200th win.
Yeah, that was my freshman year at K-State. So that was a grand old time. All right, name another year here for me.
We'll go 2010.
Oh yeah,
I think that this was like ABC. Was this the Thursday night one?
Yes, this was the Thursday night one. Man, K-State had beat them the year before, but this was game two of the streak that's currently rolling, and it was the most badass feeling going to school the next day on a Friday and just waltzing around after K-State did that to KU. And since it was one of like only 4 college football games on Thursday night, just the highlights were constantly being played on SportsCenter. Let's dig into this. Do you know what the score was after the first quarter of that game?
Was this the one that was like 28-0 at the end of the first quarter?
No, complete opposite. It was 3-0 K-State.
Oh, and then it got ugly.
Yeah, and then they scored 28 points in the second quarter. They're up 31-0 at halftime. All right, let's dive into this a little bit more. See,
ooh, pretty sure okay. This was a Thursday night FSN game too.
It was. It absolutely was. I just remember at one point Dave Lappin said something like David Garrett made a play, and Dave all Lappin right. was like, "That's my man right there." I was like, oh, "Okay, whatever." Okay. Let's see. Carson Kaufman had a QBR of 98.1 in the game. And do you want to take a guess of how many incompletions he threw? He threw 16 passes.
I'll say 2 incompletions.
Even less. He threw 1. He was 15 of 16 in the game. K-State had 3 guys run for over 60 yards. Carson Kaufman also had 42. Daniel Thomas, 91. William Powell, 70 on 5 carries. Colin Klein, 2 carries, 60 yards, and then Kaufman had 42. Very young John Hubert there had 19 rushing yards in the game.
I think Klein 2 for 60 is the most interesting fact about this game.
Yeah, Aubrey Quarles also had a carry in the game, 4 yards, so good for Aubrey Quarles. I was going to look to see if he had done anything to throw him out there and mention him. I don't know if there's anything else too terribly interesting here. 2 guys caught touchdown passes, kind of unique for the era that we started to move into, where there's a giant lull. But do you know who caught the 2 touchdown passes? It's 2 different guys, but they weren't wide receivers.
2 different guys and they weren't wide receivers. Okay. Okay. One of them has to be like another fullback tight end kind of going on. Is one of them a fullback?
No, both are tight ends.
Oh, God.
And both of these guys felt like they were playing at K-State for a long time because good teams moving forward.
Is one of them Andre McDonald?
Yeah. Andre McDonald, 1 catch, 29 yards, touchdown.
And then I'll say that the other one's like Travis Tannehill,
yeah,
too.
Travis Tannehill, there you go.
So, yeah.
Yep. That's really about all that I can pick out of this game. It was not like anything too wild or crazy looking at this. Steven Harrison had an interception, so he had that going for him. There's really not much. And on the KU side, there's nothing fascinating about what they did in that game. So I'll have you throw out like maybe a couple more years as we keep this going, because I am enjoying this, looking through this stuff.
You know, why not? Let's go 2018.
Oh God. I love and hate the 2018 game all at the same time. As a guy that was a big Alex Delton fan, at least I played one on the radio with John Kurtz at the time. K-State, as everybody remembers, snuck that one out 21-17. the final score in the game. I don't even know what would have happened for this to have gone down. Colby Moore apparently threw a pass in the game for K-State. I don't remember that happening.
No.
But I would love to know the scenario in which it happened.
I didn't go in for the second half of this game. Fun fact for
you. Wow, you gave up on them.
Yeah, the 2018 season, I was not having a great time.
Okay, let's see here. What is the most notable thing? Not trying to be mean here, but something went down in the game. Blake Lynch was 3-3 on extra points, but he didn't attempt a field goal. Do you know the kicker that missed a field goal for K-State against KU in this game?
K-State had two kickers this time. Was this one Cantelli too?
No. This was post Cantelli. I don't think you're gonna remember it at all. I only remember him because I had like a class or two at K-State with him, and I was like, I'll never see you on the field. And then he missed a kick in that game, and I just felt bad whenever I would look at him the rest of the time. So my apologies to Andrew Hicks,
who was
sent into the game to kick a 53-yard field goal that he missed. I mean, that's Bill Snyder putting a guy out there just in a totally unwinnable situation.
That's not setting up your kicker for success at all. Haven't kicked all year. Come in, make a 53-yarder for us.
Which became a very common theme for Bill Snyder down the end stretch of his career, putting guys in positions that they had no business in being in and just letting people trash them. But yeah, that was Andrew Hicks in that game. All right, well, the man of the hour was Alex Delton. He ran in the game-winning score. You can ballpark this, but do you know how much time was left in the game when Alex Delton scored the go-ahead touchdown?
I'll say like 3 minutes.
That's pretty spot on. 2:46 was left on the clock when Alex Delton did his weird little strut into the end zone that I'll never forget.
Heisman moment.
It was his Heisman moment. Yeah, if Alex Delton was good enough to be a Heisman contender, that would have won him the Heisman right there. However, he won a Heisman in my heart for keeping the streak alive against KU. I mean, I was in that end zone where he scored, watching the game because, you know, it was late in the game, so whatever, getting ready to move on. And I can remember just, like, going over the process in my head, like, how do you respond to losing to KU in football? Like, it just feels so far out there and everything. I was going through that, and then he just busted through 21-yard run. I will be dead serious when I tell people, I think that's my favorite K-State play of all time. I really do. It's just, that is up there with how much I love the 2007 NIT game against Vermont. Like, not really is that my favorite game ever, or, you know, Alex Delton's run, but, like, if somebody's like, hey, give me, like, a niche, like, moment that you really love, that Alex Delton run, boy, nothing compares to what happened there. So, I appreciate that game, but yeah, let's see, anything else interesting from this game? Well, Alex Barn ran for over 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nobody too crazy caught a pass that would blow your mind in that game. It just kind of shows what a bad situation K-State's receiving room was at that point in time. So not much to throw out there in that situation. So we can move on. Pick one more year here. Make it a good one.
We'll go 2016 as our final one.
Well, 2016, you started the segment with that. So maybe this tells me we've gone on too long.
Yeah, we'll go 15 then.
Okay, perfect. I can already tell you that K-State had I guess we would call it a special team score in this game.
I guess we'll call it a special team score.
So looking through and seeing how all this goes, it's not really all that fun because Morgan Burns recovered the punt that was blocked in the end zone. So it's, you know, a guy that already had enough touchdowns on special teams that year, he just got another freebie. K-State had three touchdowns from fullbacks in this game. I'm sure you can guess who one of them was.
Winston Dimmel.
Yeah, Winston Dimmel, just the Jayhawk killer, just throttling guys there. The first one was a 12-yard run by Winnie. So props to him on that one. KU turned it over on downs. This is very funny. So here is how it played out. Ryan Willis, complete pass to Keon Kinner for 5 yards. He completed another pass for 3 yards. So it's 3rd and 2 at the KU 31. Jordan Willis sacked him back to the 25. And KU's punter had trouble with the snap, it would appear. And he fell on the ball at the KU 12-yard line, and they gave it to Winston Dimmel, who ran in for a 12-yard touchdown. There was one other fullback that scored, though. And
Gronkowski.
Yep, a fullback that people probably would have wished that K-State used more than they did. And let's see if there's anything else notable. I mean, K-State didn't have what I would call a real player score a touchdown until the second quarter. Joe Huebner ran in a touchdown. No offense to anybody. I don't think K-State had a real player score a touchdown in this game now that I look at it. The touchdowns came from Winston Dimmel, Morgan Burns, Glenn Gronkowski, Joe Huebner, and that's it. So, yeah, a real player did not score a touchdown in this game for K-State. Cody Cook threw an interception. So, shout out to the Cody Cook truthers out there.
The fact that Cody Cook threw an interception in this game and three fullback touchdowns, awesome.
Another odd one. Apparently Zach Davidson had a pass in this game. No recollection of that.
No.
Your boy Justin Silman, 6 carries, 18 yards. K-State used, let's see, 1, 2. They used 3 different running backs in the game. Dalvin Warmack got himself a little carry there. I'm pretty sure at one point in time, my wife's cousin dated Dalvin Warmack for a stretch. Oh. Obviously did not work out. Let's see. Yeah, that's basically it. That game, it was a ho-hum 45-14 butt kicking of KU. So there you have it.
There you have it.
I thought it was gonna be more fun. There was a little less steam to it than I thought at various points. Just because, man, you really look at it, KU does a lot to beat themselves in these games. And that's the one thing that I think with Lance Leipold we thought would change. And last year it didn't, because KU forced that initial punt from K-State, and just a beauty by Ty Zentner, and it was also slick. So KU muffs the punt and K-State immediately gets it down in KU territory and scores and capitalizes, and the game was really never going to be the same after that point. I think that's a little bit different now, but if Jason Bean plays, that's it's not out of the realm of possibility that he makes some boneheaded moves, because that's kind of what he has done at quarterback for KU. He's awesome for 3.5 quarters, and then you give him those last 10 minutes of a game when you need him to come through or just to not make a massive error, and he makes a massive error. So that's the one thing that has really shown through in KU games of the past, where the Jayhawks have done themselves no favors in making K-State actually go out and work hard to get that victory.
Yeah. You bring up the weather. Shout out to the weather this weekend. We're going to get a much better day than we got last year for the KU-K-State game. It was so cold and so wet.
Yes. No, it is going to be a much better situation for the weather this weekend. Although we've had a bad time talking weather on this show this year. you say one thing and then it immediately changes. But it's looking like Saturday, mid-60s through the day. So we'll probably be in the 50s by kickoff. But not too bad. It'll be a good time. I will say, I think we're actually in a good weather spot, like moving forward for the rest of the year, where we might avoid any wet weather that takes place.
Well, you just jinxed it for next week.
Yeah, that's all right. Farmageddon probably deserves a little bit of a wet weather, cold situation. A lot of those Iowa State games seem cold.
So
the 2015 cold. Iowa State game was freezing. It was like cutting through every layer of your body. Very cool. But all right, well, that will do it for us. Appreciate those that stuck all the way to the end to hear us just rant on about random K-State box scores. K-State 31-10 in 2013 over KU. You want take a guess real quick on the way out. How many times did John Hubert carry the football in that game?
In 13?
Yeah.
I'll say 28.
Very close. He carried it 30 times for 220 yards. So... Oh, shout out to my man, Robert Rose, 3 carries, 4 yards.
There you go.
K-State only going to run a little bit in that game. Also had a tight end score a touchdown in 2013. Any guesses on who?
Was this another one that stuck around for a while?
Possibly.
Oh. Mm. Yeah, I don't have a guess on this.
Zach Trujillo.
Oh, he did stick around for a while.
Glenn Gronkowski had a 29-yard touchdown reception in the game. So Glenn Gronkowski and Winston Dimmel, both KU killers in those games. And four interceptions by the Cats in the game. Shout out to Dylan Schellenberg with a pick against the Jayhawks. That is that's an all-time moment for K-State football right there. So shout out to Dylan Schellenberg and the 2013 Cats for being what? That would have been like the fifth win in this stretch that we're currently on.
That was 1-5.
Yep. So, 10-year anniversary of K-State's 2013 win over KU and Dylan Schellenberg's pick. Never forget. For Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Vo. Stay locked in with KSO as we head all the way up to the weekend in the Sunflower Showdown and also K-State's MTE basketball event as they are in the Bahamas. They face Providence Friday night at 5:00, and then Sunday they will get either Georgia or Miami. So that will do it. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online.